My heart has no words. My eyes have no tears left. Mind had done gone crazy. Went off and married my fears. Now I'm standing here with nothing left to tell you. I'm standing here with nothing to prove.
All right, welcome back to another edition of Mormon Expression Voices. Heather has allowed me to sit in the seat as your guest host today. And we're here with a studio audience, sort of. I have been looking forward, and I've been promising Heather for a long, long time that I was going to do a Voices interview. And there's one that I've been wanting to do with my friend Jack. Jack, how long ago did we meet each other? It's been a couple years, hasn't it? Or has it just been a year?
Online, probably a couple of years. I've only seen you once before at City Creek.
Was it a magical encounter?
Absolutely.
What was I doing at City Creek? Was
eating.
I harassing the man? Eating. Oh,
eating.
Well,
yeah.
That goes without saying. I mean, I'm always eating. I mean, you have to provide more information. This is a special interview because Jack, you did not begin life with the gender that you are now.
That's right. That's right.
And maybe that's a great place to start. I mean, let's talk about the difference between sex and gender.
Okay. The difference between birth sex and gender identity is birth sex is generally the body that you're born with for your primary and secondary sex characteristics, usually identified at birth. And then gender identity is your psychological identification with what gender you are. So my birth sex is female and my gender identity is male.
And you are a passing male. I mean, just...
Oh, I hope so.
For people who'd wonder.
I think so.
You look young.
Yes.
You probably get ID'd at bars.
ID'd everywhere, but yeah.
But you're definitely a passing male. Like, people wouldn't... And I mean, it is easier. I don't know why, morphologically or whatever. I think, we were talking beforehand, and it is a hard life when you're transgendered. There's no way around it, but going female to male seems a little bit easier than male to female.
I think so, especially if you're
6'2 and 250 pounds or whatever.
That's true, and especially if you're passing.
Yeah, 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 yeah. There are men who transform who can pass, but there are a lot who have trouble. So the reason you're here is, of course, you started life out as a Mormon. You started out in the church.
Yeah, I was born in the covenant.
I like that. So normal childhood.
I'd say I grew up in a devout LDS family, and family home evening, scripture study, personal prayer, family prayers every morning.
Regular stuff. And you were a believer?
I was very devout. It was everything. I knew it was true. From the time I was baptized, I was very glad that I had the opportunity to have my sins washed away.
And did you grow up in Utah?
I grew up briefly until I was 7 in South Carolina. And then since then, yes, I grew up in Utah Valley.
Oh, so in the heart of the beast.
Yeah. In the house I'm living in now, actually.
Oh, okay. So you haven't strayed very far, which is a good sign. I mean, that speaks a lot for your parents, and
yeah.
We'll get there now, you know, because there have been plenty of people who've been in your sort of situation who end up homeless or out on the streets or whatever. So,
oh yeah,
you know, just a shout out that not all Mormons are terrible people. You know, so.
No, my family is pretty great. They've really, it's been a transition of acceptance, and a lot of it had to do with originally finding Carolyn Pearson's book, No More Goodbyes. But and they made a lot of mistakes along the way, but they're really trying. They some of the most understanding and loving people I know.
And I can see, you know, from as a parent, you know, and I have no problem at all with any, you know, anything on that front, on transgenderism or homosexuality or whatever. But there would be a sadness if I found out you know, that one of my children would go through that, because I know it's a long, tough road, you know. So even with acceptance means you still have to mourn the passage of the child that was going to be one way and accept the passage into the other thing. And
definitely.
And we go through that when people leave the church too, you know, the same sort of thing, not to the scale, of course, that you encountered.
There's certainly been a sense of loss, the loss of a daughter, and I think that as I've continued to keep open communication with them, they've found that they had a child, maybe more than a daughter, and so they can still appreciate their relationship with me, but it has been difficult, and I think sometimes it still is a little bit difficult. Things are different than what they expected it to be.
Well, so for kind of a watermark, I mean, as far as transitions, life transitions go, transgender is probably one of the biggest you can go through.
Yeah.
So you've gone through both that and leaving the church. How do they compare to each other?
Well, I left the church at the same time that I came out as gay. And so there's a lot of overlap between those two.
Mm-hmm.
And I lost almost everyone during that first coming out experience.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I got to the second experience of coming out as transgender, I had mostly weeded out all the jerks and had fewer people to tell, I guess. So that was easier.
Right.
It was easier. It was, I mean, just, I think anybody you think about waking up and telling everyone in your life that you ever want to keep contact with, that you're not this name, you're now this name, and you'd prefer that they call you by different gender pronouns, and you will be living as a man or a woman, and it's certainly a lot. It's something that I think at first held me back from coming out, because I thought, if this is who I am, then this is going to be a lot to take on.
Yeah, Zilpha, her middle name is Anne. And when her parents named her, her dad wanted to name her Zilpha, and her mother wanted to name her Anne. And her mom only agreed to it on the contingency that that was her first name, Zilpha, but she could be called Anne. So when Zilpha hit puberty and became a rebellious little teenager, she demanded that everybody stop calling her Anne and started calling her Zilpha. So if you get her baby books, everything says Anne. But the reason I bring that up is just the resistance that she encountered from her friends and relatives just switching names.
Yeah.
You know, just the fact that people had her, no, you are Annie. And if you can't switch, even though it was her first name, you know, there were people who for years refused. And that's just something as trivial as a name. And I can't imagine the pigeonholing, you know.
It bugs me so much. There's still people who they see me on the street and, hey, by my birth name. And it's just, it just pisses me off. I just, because my mom even calls me Jack all the time. It's like they can't try a little harder. They've just got to make that statement. I know who you are.
Right, right. Yeah, it's sort of a kind of a backhanded poke in the eye.
Yeah.
So when did you first notice something was different, that you were different?
When I was a child, so that's hard to pinpoint. But I kind of thought I was going to grow up to be a man. I kind of like those GQ models. Of course, I'm not going to be like that, but but I don't know. That's kind of how I pictured myself when I play house with my brother. I always preferred to play the dad, and not because I had any like thoughts about fatherhood or motherhood. It just felt better, and I didn't have the words for it until I got to be about 20, though. I felt different for a long time before I had the words.
When I was talking to a friend just the other day, you know, I was talking about how emotions are come from a different part of our brain than our language. And even just standard emotions, just even expressing sadness or anxiety or whatever, is very difficult. And, you know, when you're a young person and you're experiencing things that are very confusing because you don't have any context for it.
Right.
I can't, just trying to put that together, you know, because I asked that question and it's an unfair question, you know, like, when did you notice something was different? Because if you threw the same question at me, when did you know you were heterosexual? It's like, I don't know, you know?
Right. It just feels your natural way of being.
Right.
plus I lived in a community that didn't have, there was nothing in the cultural narrative that described what I was feeling.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, I think it's really common actually, and people don't express it, to feel some sort of confusion about their sexuality. For myself, if I take the Kinsey tests, I come out as a 0 or a 1. I come out as very straight. But there was a time, I remember when I was about 17, and I asked myself, am I just convincing myself of something? And I actually think it was a very healthy thing for me to do. I actually allowed myself to say, well, am I, you know, could I be something else? Because I think sexuality is a lot more complicated than we still try to say, oh, LGBT. And now they say LGBTQ, which is more trying to, you know, establish that queer might encompass more of that spectrum. Because LGBT is still category. It's still binary. Mm-hmm. I'm this, I'm this, I'm this, I'm this. But, you know, my point being, it's not an easy thing to puzzle through to even arrive at that, I would think.
Right.
Well, I don't know why I'm lecturing you about this. You should be lecturing me about it. So around about 20 is when you first sort of decided or came to an emotional conclusion that you were homosexual?
Well, actually, if it's about the homosexual part, I began having, I mean, attractions like when anybody does, maybe just before puberty. Uh-huh. And then puberty arose, and maybe around the time I was 13 was the first time I thought solidly, like, I'm attracted to women. But it didn't make me homosexual, not at all, because, you know, homosexuals were something entirely different, and I was not. I was a good member of the church, and I was simply had these inexplicable attractions for women. I felt this is around the same time that I was... Well, I'm going to be really open here. So,
yeah, please.
I was going through puberty, so I would masturbate. Mm-hmm. And just the masturbation at all was evil. And so I would focus and frustrate and obsess. Plus, I have all of these hormones going through, so I would masturbate often. Mm-hmm. And probably not more than normal. But when I was 15, I finally had built up enough guilt that I went into the bishop and I let him know. And I was so overcome with fear and guilt that from that day forward, I did not masturbate for 2 years.
Wow. And,
and then I masturbated once, and then I didn't masturbate for another year and a half. And even throughout that whole time, so the bishop told me that I was addicted, And so I suffered extreme shame, and I really shut myself down in a lot of ways.
Did you let the bishop in any way know what was going through your head?
Yes, just that I was doing it a lot, that I was trying not to, but that I kept wanting to. And he was saying, you know, that sounds exactly like an addiction. So... I was 15, and so he said, you might suffer with this for the rest of your life.
Because he knew he was about to go home and pop one out himself.
Yeah, probably. So yeah. It really shut me down.
Mm-hmm.
And so I really stopped thinking about my homosexuality. But when I hit around 16 or 17, like, I was just going crazy, and so I started having sex dreams about women, and it was just this reconfirmation. You're looking at guys, you're talking about guys, you're trying to go on dates with guys, but what you feel for guys is nothing. It's nothing.
I hear you, brother.
Yeah, I bet you do. It's nothing.
Right.
But what you feel for women, it's this deep and passionate, and not just sexual, but it reaches every part of your soul. And that's when it became much more difficult to hold off on it. Mm-hmm. And so for the next few years, I was suffering from same-sex attraction. At this point, I was also dealing with a childhood rape that I had gone through.
Oh, no.
And... So I had a lot on my plate, and
so as you're suffering,
really?
And I guess suffering is the right word, because
actually I want to talk about that word.
Okay, go ahead.
In the Bible dictionary, they have all these words, right?
Right.
And they have suffering, and I would look it up during sacrament meeting, and I would remind myself that suffering meant two things. It meant to go through extreme pain, but it also meant to suffer something to happen, because that was what God mm-hmm. wanted me to do. He wanted me to allow this to happen. He wanted me to suffer this to happen. So I would just remind myself that every time I was suffering, that I was doing what God wanted me to do.
Right, which is something that some perverted church leaders still say to homosexual individuals. Say, that's just your cross to bear, and for some reason, God wants you to have that malady and tough.
Yeah.
So during this time, you know, you're obviously suffering from all the church guilt and shame. You're dealing with your own feelings of same-sex attraction, which I assume you feel extra shame and extra guilt and extra...
There's so many things I don't even... There's so much I can't even remember. I know there was a time where I was so scrambled inside that I would... quietly swear to myself just to have the opportunity to slap myself across the face.
I did the same thing.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I when I try to put myself in your shoes, you know, I think about the shame and guilt I felt just from, you know, just plain old vanilla masturbation, you know. I wasn't even in anything kinky at that point. So, and to have the things that are said, the awful, awful things that are said in sacramenting again and again and again about same-sex attraction issues, you know, to internalize that, I can't imagine the internal state of guilt and shame you would have felt at that time.
I started biting myself for a year. I didn't even register it as me hurting mm-hmm. myself.
Right.
But I'd bite and bite and bite until it would just hurt and hurt. And that would, I just knew that it made me feel better.
Mm-hmm.
And by that time, I was 17 or 18, and I was just going through so much shit.
So did you, during any of this time, confess the same-sex issues to the bishop, or would you only talk about masturbation?
I didn't. When I ended up masturbating the one time between all those years, I didn't go in and confess, because I... did what I did as a child and as a young teenager, is I'd go to God and I'd say, okay, God, if we can settle this,
yeah,
then
let's
I don't
make
have
a deal.
To go, because
yeah.
I don't want to go.
Right, right.
And so I did that. And then by the time I had masturbated again, this time I was in love and had the major hots for my best friend, Kelly.
Uh-huh.
And I went in, and I was in the singles ward by this time, so I hadn't done anything yet, but I went into him and I said, I just want you to know that I've gone into my bishop before, and he said that I was addicted to masturbation. I think I might have some problems with that, so I'm just letting you know, just in case I do.
Well, the preemptive confess. I like that.
Yeah, so...
So you're about 18 now.
19.
So you mentioned you had a sort of a rape situation, but other than that, did you have any sexual activity?
No.
No, I feel like I'm giving the bishop's interview now.
No.
So you'd been, you'd stayed clear of that up until you hit your young adult years.
Yeah, Kelly was my first.
Okay. So let's go there. What sort of led you to go from theory to practice, as it uh-huh. were?
I felt really bad about myself, not just in this way, but also I didn't think that I was very attractive. I just felt really low on the dating totem pole. And so this guy I met on our first date, he looks me in the eye, he says, "You are beautiful." And I just was like, "Oh, thank you." And so within a week, we were saying we loved each other. Within 2 weeks, we were talking about marriage. Mm-hmm. And within 3 or 4, we were engaged. And within another month, we had broken it off. I had broken it off. And so after I broke it off, though, I found a new sense of empowerment. And I went out and I got a haircut, and I felt empowered. And Kelly was my best friend at this point. We connected like I'd connected with no one, and she knew all of my secrets.
And you're both still fully active in church.
Yeah, yeah. The only reason either of us were not active was because we both dealt with anxiety issues, and going right. to church... exacerbated those.
Especially issues. Singles wards. Those places yeah. are a mess.
Yeah, yeah, really.
I don't mean that facetiously. They are a pressure cooker of anxiety, just from the way they're structured and the way they force people to interact. It's very unnatural. Everybody in there is stressed out. It's like a puppy pound full of chihuahuas.
Right. I was too anxious to interact, but then when I wouldn't interact, I'd be judged for not interacting.
Right, right.
And so Kelly and I, we spent a few weeks at the end of the summer before she was supposed to go off to college in Price.
So you say you shared everything.
Did
she have same sex?
No, she said she was completely heterosexual, but mm-hmm. she knew that I had attractions for women, and eventually at some point she knew that I was attracted to her.
Right.
But she wasn't attracted to me, so she treated it more like a game, and I don't think she had the full context to really understand.
And she's young, too.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. And growing up in the same culture I was, so.
Right.
Her family started being very suspicious of me, and at this point, I was majorly depressed, hurting myself. This was maybe 3 or 4 months before I was going to come out and leave the church. So I'm in the really pressure cooker stage here just before I decide I can't do it anymore.
You say it's 3 or 4 months ahead, but you're not having issues with the church.
Oh, no. No, no, no. I'm having issues with me.
Right, right.
Right. And I remember even Kelly and I talking, and I'm going back and forth in this struggle. I've told my dad and my brother that I am attracted to women. And I'm going back and forth in this struggle. I want, maybe I should just go after women. And I remember even at this point, Kelly and I were talking, and she was like, you know, if you did that, you would go to the celestial kingdom. That's what would happen. Mm. And it's not worth it. So you have to just remember that.
Mm.
And that's where we both were. And we were both like helping each other. In some ways, she was really helping me with my depression because she was a great support system.
Right.
I was in therapy at the time anyway, but there was added drama with her family wanting her to stay away from me.
Right. Now, you say you're in therapy. You're just in plain old normal therapy, not reparative therapy or anything like that.
No. My therapist didn't know that I had attractions for women.
Oh, okay.
It was something that I kept very private. It was probably Kelly that I really only spoke to about it, and then my dad and my brother knew because I had told them once.
Right. So you said that was about 3 months before kind of everything fell apart.
Right. So it's been a few years, so let me think. as our friendship progressed, Kelly started to feel some attractions for me too.
Right.
And her family thought that they saw something, which really was nothing, and pulled her aside and had her sit down in just the family room where everybody
they did an
was
intervention.
Walking in and out. Yeah, well, this is the first of many. Some of my favorite people. And they said, "Are you gay?" And she was like, "Well, Jack, you know, my birth name, Jack's interested in me, but I'm not in him." They were like, "Okay, well," and notice she's not living at home at this time, but they were like, "Okay, you need to not do any more sleepovers. You need to not touch at all." She's 20 too. and a few other rules.
Right.
That was an odd time in our relationship because she was kind of put between where she wanted to be and her family trying to keep her righteous and her wondering if she needs to be righteous. So that kind of carried on for a few more months until we almost had sex, and it was just the craziest, scariest thing ever because I thought I had just ruined everything. I had lost Kelly and I had lost myself and I didn't know what was going on at all. And so I was going to meet with my bishop. And soon after, I came home and I masturbated and I felt better than I had in 3 years. And the orgasmic glow, I swear it lasted for an hour. And I just felt free. I felt right. at peace. It was something that I thought, if God, because I still believed in God, and this was very important to me, if God, okay, sorry, I have to back up. The reason I had stayed away from homosexuality was because I said, God loves me. God speaks to the prophets. the prophets are telling me the things that God would tell me. And if God loves me, he would want the best for me. So I need to follow the prophets right. because he would want the best for me. And after this, I thought, this is obviously not the best for me. This is doing some serious damage to me.
Mm-hmm.
And if God loves me,
you mean the church? That's when you start switching and saying, right. this status I'm in of going to church and all that, that's doing damage. So the church is what's causing the pain, and you suddenly realize that, saying, oh right. well this feels, you know, this feels great, and this feels, and not great in like
pleasurable, but like I'm at peace relief, with my peace. Soul yeah. is at peace, mm-hmm. and it wasn't long after that I prayed and I got a revelation from God that he made me this way gay for a purpose. He made me gay because he wanted me to be gay, and he wouldn't have made me gay if he didn't want me to be gay. And that allowed me to step away from the church. I still believed it pretty much.
Right.
Like you hear a lot of people will still say, well, I the prophets are the prophets. It's just that they've got the gay thing wrong.
Uh-huh.
I knew that if I couldn't be accepted there, and I needed to be accepted as my whole self needed to be, then I wasn't going to be safe there, and I shouldn't put myself there. So I stopped attending. That was the hardest moment for my parents.
That's interesting. Even with all the stuff that comes after.
Yes.
That moment when you quit going to church.
They'd even tell me, why can't you go even if you're gay?
Right. Because at that point, they're losing your soul, right? You know.
Right. All they'd worked for all their lives.
Right. I mean, that's telling. That speaks a lot to, you know, all the stuff that you've gone through to this point, and then all the things you're going to have happen after that. That moment is so meaningful to them. It shows, I mean, how hard it is to disengage from the church.
It's been 4 years now that I've been away from the church, and it was maybe a year and a half that my mom called me and said, I don't hurt anymore. That's how long it took.
A year and a half ago.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
She says, it doesn't hurt me anymore.
My mom, she kept it, but I've been around her long enough to tell she was doing an emotional flinching, and it was several years after she kind of accepted the fact that we were leaving church before I could tell she wasn't flinching or hurting around us, that she had accepted. It takes a long time, and I think sometimes when we all leave the church, or for that matter, I mean, it's very parallel to the coming out, that we sometimes focus on our own issues, as we should, but we forget how difficult it is for those around us to process it too.
Yeah, absolutely. I was feeling like, here I am, I've found something that will actually fulfill me. I'm taking a major risk. I'm losing people. Why can't people be more supportive of me? And I was very, very, very patient. I mean, people were emotionally abusive, and I would just take it and say, I'm sorry that you feel that way. I'm sorry this is so hard on you. And you know what? After a while, I just stopped taking shit. Because this is why I've got the anxiety disorder I have. I just have taken too much shit over the years.
Right, right.
You can't do it anymore.
Well, you get anxiety oftentimes, and I'm no expert other than I feel a lot of anxiety myself, but you're oftentimes trying to do simultaneously conflicting things. You're trying to please different people, and it's sort of, you got this yin and yang pulling on you almost like really fast, and it just sort of spins you up, you know?
Yeah, and no matter what I do, people leave. People don't want to be associated. They've known me since I was 7.
Right.
They were my activity days leaders. They were my young women's leaders. They mentored me. They sat across from me in Bishop's Council and said, I tell my daughters that I want them to pay attention to you and grow up like you. And then it doesn't matter anymore. None of that matters.
Right.
Best friends who knew me for years and knew the most personal parts of me. It didn't matter anymore. As far as they knew, I was now just a homosexual.
And this is before the transgender stuff even
surfaces. Yeah. Absolutely. So I was ready to get out of the valley.
Mm-hmm.
And because I was still living in American Fork, Kelly and I decided to move to USU. This is also in conjunction with her family finding out about our relationship and going through a couple of terrible interventions where it's just so much accusing her of needing mental help, of needing to get away from me, saying terrible things about her, how she doesn't attract anyone other than like pornography users, and because the good people will know, look at her and know that she has problems.
Mm-hmm.
And none of this got ever, nobody took accountability.
Right. There's this nasty trick that fundamentalist religions like Mormonism pull, where they set a standard that is unachievable by anybody. And everybody knows that. But the minute somebody fails, like has a real failure, like falls out of the system, well, then there's all this litany of stuff they can lay at your feet saying you haven't done this. I saw something from Facebook that somebody had posted, a believer, saying no true believing Mormon or no true Christian or no true follower of Jesus would ever leave the church. It's almost the standard language of the no true Scotsman fallacy, right?
Yeah.
So everybody out there, every member falls short, and they'll even acknowledge that, but they will use it as a bludgeon against you as soon as you have real issues, because then they could say, see, you had dirty thoughts and you looked at pornography and you used cuss words. And so you really weren't loving Jesus all the way along, which is why you've been abandoned to the buffetings of the devil. It's a sinister ploy. And so we all fell for it. And what's unfortunate is those around us, our loved ones, fall for it. And the only reason I say that is because we kind of have to be a little forgiving of them, because it's like they can't. They've been trained to reject you.
Right. They can't comprehend it. In the most loving voice, I had a close friend tell me that it was possible for Satan to overcome us and that for us to be influenced by Satan. And here I am having a full-on panic attack, and he knows it. I've let him know. And he wants to go into the Joseph Smith movie, and I'm saying I don't want to. And he calls the two sister missionaries over to come. And he's like, my friend recently left the church. Will you talk to her? And I was angrier after that. And it was just for him, it was like just all of this was just confirmation. But his tone, you could tell the reason he was doing this was because he loved me. Right. He cared about me. He wanted to do the best for me. But he thought this was the best, and really he's just damaging me.
And that's what's unfortunate. That's what's sad about the whole situation, is I'm not excusing any poor behavior. There's people who behave in terrible ways that we need to have them stop. But at the same time, they think they're doing... That's what's so insidious about it.
They really do
something good.
They really do. They think they're doing the thing for your benefit.
Right. So around about the time that you both move up to Logan... At this point, you've sexualized your relationship. You become more intimate together.
Yeah, and we've moved into the dorms together, and we're sharing.
So, are you on the down low then?
We're kind of on the down low, kind of not.
Okay.
Maybe like I am now. Like if somebody brings it up, we'll be honest. But right.
But so Utah State, for those who don't know, is a state school, so there would be no dorm prohibition. You're not at risk of being thrown out of the university, but it is still very LDS up there.
Yeah, and they have a great LGBTQ program that we would frequent, and so we stuck mostly to that community.
Okay, so there was a school-sponsored community, yeah.
Right.
And those faculty-sponsored and had resources.
Yes, yeah.
Okay. Good. So by that time, you guys aren't engaging in church stuff at all up in Utah State, or are you?
No, not as active members. We've both distanced ourselves because of our experiences with down here in Utah Valley and with the people.
From pain, mostly from the emotional.
Yeah, things. From the pain. It's not until a few months later, though, that we find MormonThink.com. Right.
And I think to underline that, the blowhards like myself, who sort of thought their way out of the church, although I've said many, many times, I didn't enjoy church. It was not to the level you experienced, but it was not emotionally supportive to me. So those two things together. But I find there's just as many people who feel their way out of the church. In a way, I honor them more because, who say, no, it doesn't feel right. And we sometimes, like on this podcast, give deference to the people who think their way out of the church. But I think there's a lot of people who it doesn't feel right. There's something wrong with it. They get that fundamentally. It's like they're more in tune with it. And then oftentimes the research, like you're laying out, comes secondary.
Yeah.
So I mean, I think it's in a way a more legitimate path and healthier, because you're already out by the time you can process through that intellectual stuff.
Back to the trans thing. This is also when I'm when I'm starting to learn more about myself.
So this is when you're first exposed to transgender, yes, sort of as a concept.
Yeah, there was a trans man on campus, and I went to a panel hoping to be in one in the future, and he was there, and he talked about his experiences.
So you hope to be in the panel as a homosexual,
yes,
homosexual in the future.
As a homosexual woman, uh-huh. And he talked about his experiences. Specifically, he said that when he was younger, he looked in the mirror, and he didn't see himself, and I looked around, and everyone was like, just surprised, because everyone was obviously seeing themselves in the mirror. And I thought that was so odd, because I never saw myself in the mirror. And that was my first experience that led to several months of just asking myself different questions. What does it mean? Who am I? And eventually, you know, there's a Halloween party. I think I talked about this in my I'm an ex-Mormon video. And he dressed up as a policeman. He wasn't dressing up as a man, as a policeman. He was a man dressing up as a policeman.
So he was female to male.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And I dressed up as a character that I really emulated in a book I was reading, who was a woman who would dress up as a man. So I thought this is a good opportunity for me to put my foot out there and see how I feel with this. So I did that, and he passed really well. And I didn't pass. It was very, very obvious. And I just remember looking at him and feeling this just pit on my stomach, just filled with jealousy, just rage that I would never... I think what I thought was, he's always going to have something that I will always want, but I will never have. And it was never more clear to me than at that point that I was male. And that really changed how I started thinking about things, how much more seriously I started thinking about my gender.
So it came sort of as an epiphany when you realized that you were gendered male.
Right, right. That it wasn't him being a man. It was him passing as a man. It was him being able to move from having been born female to being able to live as a man.
Yeah, that's understandable. So what's next? I mean, you get this sort of revelation that, holy shit, I'm a man.
Terror. What's next? You know, does that mean a physical transition? Does that mean keeping in touch with people? What about people from like childhood? If they see me and they recognize me, and I'm supposed to explain this every time, everyone in my ward, everyone in my community, everyone my parents ever want to keep in contact with, every time we take a family photo, or they like, what is my future? And I came home for Christmas break, and at one point I dressed up in a dress for Christmas dinner, and Kelly was with me, and it was just wrong. It was just not me.
So Kelly was there. I'm mm-hmm. just trying to gauge where your family is at. Are you guys?
They don't know at all.
Oh, so to them, she's still just your bestie.
Oh no, they know about us. They don't know about my transgender.
But are they accepting of her as your girlfriend?
They were always good to her, even though I think it was difficult because in some ways she was the catalyst to me leaving the church because I'd fallen in love with her, even though I had nothing. I mean,
right, right.
I could have fallen in love with anybody, but
yeah, when we left the church, Zilpah's family blamed me and my family blamed her. So yeah.
Right. But they were always good to her, which I always appreciated, especially being on the other side of that. It's amazing. It really was. They went above and beyond. At this point, Kelly was the one who knew the most, and maybe a couple of friends up at USU, and she was very accepting. She didn't understand it all. She wasn't entirely comfortable at first. Here her girlfriend is saying she might be a man, and she's not really sure what to do with that, but she was willing to ask questions and to listen. Mm-hmm. And over the process, a few more months, and then coming home, I knew I had to do something, because I wasn't going to live the rest of my life being wrong in my own body. And things were going really well with my parents. I was really getting along. I hadn't seen them for months because I was too afraid to come down, because I had started living full time dressing as a man. So I didn't want to come down yet, but things were going really, really well. And so I was really conflicted, because what if I told them now, and then that ruined things?
So at this point, you start wearing men's clothing, you cut your hair short.
Yeah, I'm wearing a binder shirt, I'm wearing a packer.
A binder shirt, obviously, to to
bind my breast.
Bind your breast. And yeah. So what's a packer?
A packer is something you wear either in a strap or in
I wear one.
Your underwear.
No. I don't know. Yeah.
It's a soft silicone penis and testes prosthesis.
Do you wear the XL or the DXL? No. I don't know where that came from.
I don't wear one anymore.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Me neither.
Okay,
just for
good.
The record, just to be uh-huh. clear to everyone out there, I do
you don't
not
need
wear,
one.
I don't know.
No.
I just go with a sock. I mean,
yeah, a sock fair. Works too sometimes.
It's just a lot easier, you know. I mean, where do you even go about getting, like, when you're binding, do you, I guess you live, you're younger than I am, so you live the age of the internet. I'm an old guy.
Well, first, the neoprene things you wear when you're working out on your abs,
uh-huh.
I started wearing those. That's a bad idea because it caused so many, the sweat gets caught up in
so you'd wear them all day long.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Ugh. And then I wasn't sure what to do after that, so I took scarves with Kelly's help and tried to wrap them around really tight, and that was really obvious, so I'd wear three t-shirts. But finally, thanks to the help of my trans man friend, mm-hmm. I got them from underworks.com.
Okay, so that's, let me write that down, Underworks.
Mm-hmm.
So,
Underworks,
which is I assume specifically they sell materials for female to male transfer.
Yes, and I think some for male to female, button hip packers, to pack your jeans so your silhouette looks more feminine.
Mm-hmm.
And I think maybe some other things. I've really only gone to them for the binder shirts, though.
You don't wear the butt packers?
No. If anybody wants a recommendation, I've gone through a few of them, and I really like the tri-top binders. It doesn't go over my belly. I don't have to keep it under my belt or anything and pull it down all day.
Cool.
Yeah.
So at this point, I mean, you go to class, and do you just correct that? Because it still has your female name.
Yeah, I would tell my teachers. By that time, I was going by Adrian.
Uh-huh.
So I would say
which is kind of middle of the road, yeah.
Yeah, like which that. Was problematic a little bit because I thought it sounded like, I think Adrian Nestor, Heroes, was really big, and he played the flying politician.
Oh, I'm on the television show.
Yeah, on the television show, right. And so the actor's name was Adrian.
Uh-huh.
And so I thought I was really cool for going by Adrian, but I hadn't been on testosterone. So everyone thought I was Adrian, Adrienne.
Right, right, right.
So that's why eventually I switched to Jack.
Okay.
So I called my parents finally, April 2010, I think. Mom,
how does one start that conversation?
Yeah, I know, right? And I wasn't sure how to do it. Should I send a letter? Should I wait until I can say it in person? Should I email it? Should I say it over the phone? Because I want to give them enough space to handle it on their own.
Right, right.
But I also don't want it to be too impersonal. So finally I decided, because I'd come out to a friend actually very recently, and she had taken it very well. And so I was like, now I'm going to do it. I feel confident. I'm going to do it. So I picked up the phone. And I called my dad, and my dad was doing some housework of some kind, and my mom was getting back from the temple. And I said, I want to tell you guys something. Remember, our relationship's going really well.
Uh-huh.
And I said, if both of you guys could get on the phone, I have something to tell you. And I don't remember exactly how I told them, but I told them that I was transgender, which meant that I felt that my identity was male, and that I was intending to transition, that I was letting them know because they were an important part of my life, and that I valued their relationship to me, and that things in my life were going to change, and I didn't want to lose them, and other things like that. And I remember my dad said, well, it'll be an adjustment, but we'll get through it. And at
wow.
first, those words hurt me,
mm-hmm.
and then not long after, I thought that what he's saying is he's willing to make that adjustment for
right.
me.
I mean, that's why I take it. I mean, that's
oh, yeah.
huge. That's,
it was.
I mean, I don't know if I could be that big.
That's what he said. Isn't yeah. that's just something. And my mom was crying a little, and she said, I love you. And that was basically the conversation. I said I was going to let them know when I started testosterone, and I had some information. I don't remember where it was from. It was before the Family Acceptance Project, but something similar to
now,
that.
What's the Family Acceptance Project?
I don't know if I can give it justice on here, but it's a pamphlet that talks about the effects that family love and acceptance can have. This one was actually, you know, this one was from PFLAG. It was a pamphlet about welcoming our trans family and friends. That's what it was. And so I sent it to them via email to look at.
And had your parents been involved at all with PFLAG? PFLAG is,
not at all.
Is the support organization for friends and family of people with gender issues.
And homosexuality.
Homosexuality primarily, yeah.
Right. And no, because I think it was still too painful for them that I was gay in the first place to mingle, and especially mingle with people who were totally okay with their kids.
Right, right.
But later my dad said, like a couple of weeks later, I asked if he'd read it, and he said he hadn't read it, but that my mom had stayed up all night, like pouring through all the information about transgender people and what they go through, and our relationship continued. In fact, that next Christmas, so I had these stockings that I'd had since I can remember, and had all of my siblings and my parents' names on them. My dad's name is Mark, and my birth name is spelled similarly to Kelly's name. And so what they did is my mom took out the stitching on Mark and the stitching on my name and put in Jack and Kelly.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's huge.
Yeah, it was. It's beautiful.
I mean, coming from the perspective, and they're still believers today.
Yes, very.
I mean, coming from that perspective, it's just, I mean, these people are wonderful people.
They're beautiful people. They're beautiful people.
So, they start reading through it, start giving you support. So, time to get on testosterone. So what's, and luckily you have a contact.
Up at the
university. So, and I assume he referenced you to a doctor?
Yeah, a specific doctor, and they got me on that. They do a couple of shots, and then they check your blood levels to see if they're fairly normal for what they're looking for your circumstances.
Right.
And then adjust the shot by less or more, and then keep going with that until they have to adjust it, adjust the dosage as you...
So how long have you... So you said, do they ratchet it up slowly?
Yeah. Yeah, because they don't want to shock your body too much.
Right. So you look like a MMA guy or whatever.
Yeah.
So how long have you been on testosterone now?
I was on it for maybe 8 months, and then I lost my insurance and was off it for a while. I don't remember the offs and ons, all of them, due to finances and insurance. Yeah, but I'm on my dad's insurance now, and so the insurance doesn't cover it anymore. But
yeah, I was going to ask, did they cover it as a medical condition, or I mean, I was surprised they covered it at all.
No, I just recently found this out. In fact, I thought that they covered it, and then they were saying that they don't. And I think it's absolutely ridiculous, because it's maybe a 30-second to a minute visit. I go in, they pull down my pants a little, they shoot me in the hip, and then I walk out. I was getting a quarter of a milliliter. Now I'm getting a half a milliliter.
Right.
It's $30 for just them putting it in my hip. 11 or 13, somewhere between there, for the testosterone itself.
So, and this might not be a question you know the answer to, but testosterone's not hard to get because the bodybuilders are taking it all the time. Do a lot of, or is there a number of people in the community who just go that route and just get it from the black market?
Yes, but it's generally not as safe. It's harder to regulate the amount you're getting and how like clean the sample is, and you can't go in and get your blood levels done, so you could be taking a lot more than you need.
So how's life different? How are you different with the testosterone?
I am more energized. I'm happier. I am hornier. And on top of that, the direct effect it has on my gender dysphoria, also a lift that depression that comes with the dysphoria. So I've been working out more.
So maybe define what you mean by dysphoria.
Gender dysphoria is the main symptom, I don't know, the qualifying symptom of genderism, transsexualism.
Uh-huh.
It is the extreme discomfort due to the mismatching, the perceived mismatching of gender identity and your body.
Right. So when you look downstairs, you say, that's not me. That's not right. I've got the wrong plumbing.
Right. And the testosterone has helped with that too, because it lengthens the clitoris. And that helps, but surgeries can also...
When you get on the testosterone, then the clitoris grows.
Yes. Right. It is basically a functional micropenis.
Mm-hmm.
So you can receive oral sex, but you can't really penetrate. There's a mild erection that occurs.
Right.
But it's not the same for sure, right. Which is why people go the route of bottom surgery. And there are two major types of bottom surgery, metoidioplasty, which is the lengthening of the clitoris, because like the tongue that connects far back into our mouth, the clitoris actually goes far back as well.
Mm-hmm.
And they draw that out further and wrap the skin around it and put in prosthetic testes. And about the same time, if not before, they perform a hysterectomy, right? And sew all that up.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a phalloplasty, where they take skin from either your inner upper arm or your inner upper thigh, and they construct a penis out of the nerves and everything and the blood vessels there, and then they try and with the clitoris drawn out again, and sometimes a bendable insertable tube, so mm-hmm. that you can use it to achieve a manual erection.
I heard an interview with his name, just the pornographer,
Buck Angel.
Well, we'll talk about Buck in a second. In a wheelchair, got hustler guy. Shit, I just had his name. But anyway, he's paralyzed from the waist down. I'll think of his name in a second. But he has the pump. Yeah. Oh. So yeah, you can use air basically to pump up and get an erection that way.
Right.
And then, you know, let it out with a valve. So I assume, you know, with both the surgery and then sort of mechanical device, you can achieve a functioning.
Right. Well, there's a high rate of infection for phalloplasty. Right. And often there's a lot of nerve damage. And so sometimes you can't feel anything anyway.
Right.
And often it doesn't look very good. You have to go to somebody who can do it really well.
Right. If you go do an internet search on male to female genitalia, they can do amazing things.
Yes.
Where you can't, you can't tell. Going the other way, for obvious reasons, is much more difficult, which is when we mentioned Buck Angel. Buck Angel is a pornographic movie star. He, very masculine looking fellow, covered in tattoos, full muscles,
mm-hmm.
bald. But he has a full functioning vagina, which from my understanding from listening to other things there, that's becoming more common for female to male, because you keep the sexual function, the pleasure aspect of the vagina, without screwing everything up with weird surgery.
Yeah.
And only your lovers are going to know, because it's you Buck, if you didn't know, if you never saw his vagina, you would he's completely passable.
Yeah. And I know it's trans person to trans person too.
Right.
Like I've read a little bit from Buck. He finds pleasure and sexually utilizing his vagina. I know I don't. And in fact, the sexual relationship that I had, it was much more heterosexual than even if I didn't have a full functioning penis and I had a full functioning vagina.
Well, I can see that dysmorphia.
Yes, that's exactly what it is.
Would be fed by being penetrated. You know, psychologically, yeah. that could be difficult.
Yeah. And there were still problems there, you know, not being able to match up to what I'd like to be able to do mm-hmm. in the moment, or even just in general,
right.
to feel like maybe I'm not as good of a lover, that I can't do things that other men could, or that was still a problem, but it was a little bit easier having the testosterone and being able to receive oral sex. I don't know if that's too much. But.
No, I think that's what... So what other secondary characteristics? Did you start growing facial hair or anything like that?
Yes, and that is permanent once it starts growing in. Even if you go off the testosterone,
really,
that's there. Yeah.
What about you? I'm looking at the top of your head. I would assume that one of the dangers of testosterone is you start losing your hair.
Yeah. Do I look like I'm?
No. I thought you.
Okay.
You look. Yeah, I'm looking at your bald head. No, no. You know, you have a full, nice set of hair.
Okay. Good. Good.
I
want to
run my fingers through it. but you haven't had experience any hair loss or anything like that?
No, but it does run in my family, so I wouldn't be surprised if one day, you know, enough testosterone, enough years on mm-hmm. me anyway. And the vocal cords change, so the voice deepens. While you're on the testosterone, fat and muscle distribution are different, more masculine than feminine.
And I know a lot, and I think it's probably has to do with the dysmorphia, but a lot of males start really working out hard.
Yeah.
Too.
Yeah, and it really does help with the
yeah, you're cheating in the gym, you bastards.
Oh yeah. I know. That's what my dad said. I came home and I was like, check this out. And he was like, are you taking steroids? And I was like, twice a week or once every 2 weeks.
So you have not had any surgeries at this point?
No, I would like to have top surgery, especially.
So does the testosterone affect the breasts at all? Do they naturally start getting smaller when you take that, or does it not affect the breast tissue?
There's a few things. The binder shirt, I've been wearing that for 2 or 3 years now, and that just naturally changes the breast tissue, breaks up the softer breast tissue at the top where the pectorals are. And so it looks like I have pectorals, but then kind of like saggy half boobs underneath it,
which are really common at the gym. If you,
oh, good.
You know, if you go to the swimming pool, you go to the locker room, there's a lot of B cups. You know,
yeah.
I'm just putting that out there.
Oh, good. I feel good now. So the testosterone also helps gain muscle in the pecs, and as you gain muscle, it eats away at the fat.
Right.
It's just normal. So that helps too.
So, well, I guess that's true. Something I hadn't thought about. You know, if you take a healthy female versus a healthy male, their body mass index is different. So I guess the testosterone actually starts affecting that element. Your BMI is going to be more masculine over time.
Right. You'll be leaner. Mm-hmm. Yeah, more muscle inside you then, if you're doing it right. I mean, if you're not, you could get a beer belly really quick, just like any other guy.
Yeah, those guys with their beer bellies. So weird. I remember watching a documentary on this, and when people are going male to female, that I remember the two things they were talking about. Before they can get surgery, they're required to go through a certain amount of counseling.
Yeah.
And the second one, which is what I want to talk about now, we can come back to the counseling, but that they go through classes because they have to learn to walk like a female, and they have to learn to talk because it's not just vocal cords, mm-mm. right? So it seems culturally that it's easier to pass as a man. Maybe this is just my bias. I want your take. Because I can't walk, you know, heel to toe and stuff that, you know, like, so talk about the culturation, like acting like a male.
Yeah, I never had to walk heel to toe, thankfully. But that was something, that was one of the first things that I started on when I was binding with scarves.
Uh-huh.
I had
you start slouching a lot more and sitting with your legs open and things.
Actually, sitting with legs open, and you know what? Women look down a lot, like they're insecure. Now, I'm on campus.
Right.
I learned this on campus, so maybe it's about the age, too. I don't know. But and men looked more confident. I don't know if that's because they felt more safe,
uh-huh.
or that was my own interpretation.
Well, I think these are cultural elements. Yeah, I mean, there's a huge amount of body language that is gender specific. I don't think it's necessarily genetic, but you have to learn to blend in with the culture.
Yeah. And I noticed that if I acted like I belonged somewhere, then people were less likely to give me a second glance. If I mm-hmm. were to walk into a men's bathroom and kind of like look around like I wasn't supposed to be there, people would read me more likely as being female.
I hate giving out the superpower, but if you carry around a clipboard and look like you know where you're going, you can get anywhere in this world.
Okay, so, a clipboard.
So, but what you're actually telling me, I mean, to sum it all up, is you had to learn to be an asshole and then you could pass for a man, right?
I had to learn to act confident.
Okay, you say it your way, I'll say it my way.
Yeah, I didn't see it as being an asshole, but I guess, sure. Guys spoke differently to each other, but I didn't have as many guy friends to practice that with at the time. They kind of walk, they don't, yeah, I don't know. You don't see these things until like you have
to start paying attention.
Yeah. I don't want to get beat up somewhere. You
right,
know,
right.
It's important suddenly. Kind of walk with more of a swagger,
start
but not necessarily
more.
More of like a smooth, like.
Actually, take back the swearing thing. The females I'm around swear more than the men, so that won't get you anywhere. You're pretty passable. I mean, I wouldn't.
Thank you.
Yeah, I think you got it down. So I don't want to give anybody a perfect score. So I said pretty passable. So I have to hold back a little for myself.
No, I still get mammed a lot. So
I haven't been mammed in a long time.
Oh, good.
So the next thing you want to get is the top surgery.
Yeah, but I'd have to pay for that out of pocket, and that's anywhere from $6,000 to $10,000.
So typically speaking, I mean, if you've done research on this, you know, the full course. Well, testosterone is something you're going to have to take the rest of your life.
Yes.
The surgeries, I would assume this is going to cost $30,000, $50,000, $70,000 before it's all said and done.
A metoidioplasty, maybe $50,000 to $60,000. A phalloplasty, $80,000 to $100,000. And most insurances won't cover any of this, even though the AMA and APA have said that this is a medical necessity and asked insurances. I don't know if that asked is the right word, but.
And a lot of people go offshore, go to Thailand or Mexico.
Yeah.
Or.
And often the doctors are better at it.
Well, because it's like attracts like, and that's where if you're going to be a doctor specializing in this kind of surgeries, yeah, you set up shop in Bangkok.
Yeah.
So I guess it's saving for and getting to the next next point then.
Yeah.
So we talked about counseling.
Yeah, I went in and they counseled me for I think the requested limit is 3 months. I think I did it for six. It was the idea is you go in, they talk about what your expectations are with what you want. Like, for instance, I might want a full beard, but genetically or because of my own body, I may take testosterone and not have that full beard. And so they want me to understand that. Another part of this is there's some controversy about this with gatekeeping, but it gave me the chance to better articulate to myself why I felt what I felt, and I could take some of that information that I'd learned in therapy and utilize it when I would discuss it with friends and family that were confused, wondering why I would do something like this.
Right. Yeah, I can imagine take a great deal of coaching to know even what to say to people, because you end up being a counselor to everybody else dealing with their own feelings and own weirdness about gender issues, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not fair.
That's not fun.
When did you start then? We kind of brushed over the deconstruction of the church. Was that sort of hand in hand with the gender issues, or did that come a little bit before that?
Maybe a month or so before that.
To Mormon Think.
Well, I read it and I read as much of it as quick as I could.
Right.
There's a lot in it. I put it on my little Insta paper on my iPod and just devoured it, and there's just so much that just blew my mind, especially once we got to the brother of Jared, and I just, the sheer ridiculousness of it just made me feel like an idiot. I couldn't believe that I had, and I don't mean to say the people who believe it are idiots, I just like certain things that had never crossed my mind, you know, the bees and the turning and of everything.
No, it's ridiculous, and smart people can believe ridiculous things, so no insult. And then you discovered a great podcast.
Yeah, actually. Yeah. First I discovered Mormon Stories, but then I found Mormon Expression,
you know,
and
you know,
I
like
really...
My kids started on a tricycle, and then they, you know, graduate to a bicycle.
Oh,
Yeah.
I really enjoyed your podcast, though. It's still, like, a little bit weird
to
be sitting here
That's
talking
sort of out of the blue,
to you.
But yeah, thanks.
No, actually, Kelly and I would spend days just listening, just going back to the backlogs of everything you'd recorded and just listening to it, because you guys were funny and you were talking about things that interested us.
And you can listen to the early episodes before I started taking testosterone, too. So
yeah.
You can hear my progression also.
And I liked Mormon Stories, but it was a little bit more dry. And I like dry, but I also liked the humanity that came out in Mormon Expression.
Well, good. That's good to hear. So, events of your life, you're back home.
Yes.
And how's that? I mean, being Jack and living at home and back in the old neighborhood.
I don't like being in the neighborhood. But there are some good things. For instance, since I've moved out of the ward, another woman has moved in, and she is actually fully supportive of trans people. Even posted about Jazz, an out and outgoing 11-year-old trans girl. She posted about it on her Facebook page about how cool it was that her family was so supportive, and so she was so proud of how brave Jazz was. And So I've been making friends with that woman in the ward a little bit on Facebook anyway.
Wow.
And my dad has put a lot of work towards trying to get equal protection for gays and lesbians and trans people in American for job, employment, and housing discrimination. And so he has made another friend, Heidi Rodeback, in the AF City Council, who is also in my ward. Those are two good things. And then I was working out at the gym, and I had this great experience where my Stake Young Women's president, who I was really close to when I was in Young Women's, we stopped and we chatted for a little, and she was like complimenting my my muscles and my voice, and she said that she'd seen a trans person recently and talked about how positive. I mean, she didn't say it like this, but she'd made it a positive experience for that. Just, she called me Jack immediately. She was just so good to me. And you know, the more people, my mom says that the more people who see my family being comfortable with me and people like that being comfortable with me, the more people are going to be more comfortable with
me. I remember that as a study that came out that I heard on NPR back when the military was looking at Don't Ask, Don't Tell. And, you know, they did some internal studies. And the number one factor the military had, the military determined on acceptance, was if they knew somebody. If they knew somebody who was homosexual, then the numbers just went through the roof of acceptance. And that's why it's so hard, you know, for somebody in your position, because it's easy to kind of, you know, try to pass completely.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you know, you kind of plow the field for others coming behind. And that's right. Not your role. I'm not trying to say that you need to do that. But the more we are all openly accepting, you know.
That is seriously something that is, I've gone back and forth on. When Kelly and I moved back from Logan here, we moved because I passed into here as a heterosexual couple.
Right.
And it was completely different than living here as a homosexual couple. Right. People didn't stare when we held hands, when we kissed, when we were even just the least bit affectionate. People wouldn't catcall. We were just any other Joe Schmoes. And it was the most beautiful thing. And it's so easy to want to settle into that privilege and to just experience that.
That feeling of being normal. I mean, people who don't have hard things come in their life don't understand how important that is just to feel normal, just to feel regular and not special. Yeah.
Yeah, and not to be stared at. This is a simple thing like that. And sometimes I don't want to be trans. I want to be a man, you know?
Right.
And
right, yeah.
Because I am. But at the same time, I don't want to deny my experience. I don't mind talking about my experience. I'm kind of got a big head, and so I like talking about me.
That's the testosterone.
There we go.
You are becoming a man.
And I also know that if I stop talking, there's somebody else who can't talk because they don't have the... I cannot talk because of my privilege.
Right.
Other people can't talk at all because it means outing themselves before they've even made any effort to take any step in their life. You know what I mean?
Yep.
It means completely changing their life. And if there are more of me out there, then there's more people that know me that might meet a trans person, be able to take something from their experience with me.
Right.
And at the same time, it's exhausting to educate everyone. Everyone expects you to educate them. Everyone expects the details of your sex life, of your body, you're an object to everyone, and it's exhausting.
Yeah, for sure. And I think, you know, you coming on and doing this is just so admirable. But I think for those of us who were fortunate enough to not have to deal with that in day-to-day element of our lives, I'll give you an example. You know, I'm 100% supportive of LGBT rights and equality and all that kind of stuff. But I also don't like to be a dick. And oftentimes you're at the office or whatever, and you'll hear people like drop jokes or whatever that are slights. Mm-hmm. And this bothered me for a long time because I realized that I didn't want to be the guy say, hey, that's not cool. Because that's a really hard thing to do. But what I learned is that if I dropped it first, in reverse, then I was in the power seat. So I would be the first one to say something affirmative towards, gay and lesbian rights. You know, so you start the conversation and say, did you guys see Pride? The Pride festival last weekend, that was great.
That's exactly.
Because you're immediately driving in the power seat, and you're not in that position. So I'm saying, even in very small ways, of not being defensive and saying, oh, you can't say gay, you turn it around, and you openly, in very subtle ways, and it almost becomes a game. It can be very fun to do, to show yourself as a positive supporter of those things. And just something, here's one. I'll give you an example. This is my challenge to all you listeners out there. Go into work on Monday, and you can make this up. I'm giving you permission to lie. You have to use really masculine names. Yeah, we were having a barbecue with Bill and his husband Ted, and they are the greatest guys. And then just go on. You know, so you just drop it out because you've done it. You've established that there's acceptance there. The challenge, I mean, from like your perspective, is that I would, and I'll let you chime in after I shut up, but the people need to be accepting, but they don't have to go out of their way. I mean, the best thing to do is just treat you normal.
Right. That's what I want. Yeah. That's the best thing you can do, is just, if you notice, then just, as far as you're concerned, I'm Jack, and you don't have to say anything, do anything. I mean, you know, I don't mind answering questions, but it is a little bit odd, like, if I were to just meet someone and be like, so how long is your penis? Do you know what I mean? That's odd. I don't see why people meet me and they're like, so what do your genitals look like?
Right.
It's like, oh, well, you first. Mm-hmm. There are some questions that you just got to think first. And I'd like to have some kind of rapport. I don't mind answering questions.
Right.
And that's, I think, the question is, if I don't know where the boundaries are, because most people who are asking don't, then how do I know them without crossing? So I try to be patient, but try to use a little common sense, too.
Just to give, to support the LGBTQ community, we've been talking this whole hour about transgender issues. There's another category out there of transsexuals. They're a small minority of population, and they fall somewhere in between. I don't know
actually,
how much...
Actually, I think you have that the opposite.
Do I have them screwed up?
I'm transsexual because I'm was born with a female body and a male. But there's the transgender community, it can encompass any kind of gender identity variance.
And my advice when you're dealing with a transgendered individual is ask.
Yeah.
Ask, do you want me to call you he or she? Don't do it in a patronizing way. Just straightforward, you know.
Yeah, I love that.
And there you go. You know. Well, I mean, it's been enlightening and fun to talk with you, Jack. I'm excited for your next phase. So you and Kelly are no longer together. Right?
That's right.
So are you ready to date yet, or
no?
Is it still working on your own stuff?
I'm working on my own stuff. I think I will be for a while.
Right. Well, that sounds healthy.
Yeah.
But I'm sure there's a lot of great things awaiting you. I mean, I can tell.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure many women will listen to this podcast and be like, wow, that 2-inch penis, I got to get on that.
Well, I've said it before, I don't want to, but as a female to male, I think you're actually in a slightly better place because
absolutely.
A lot more women are more fluid in their sexuality. I mean, there's a lot more women who identify as bisexual or whatever. Than the reverse case. So I think when you're ready, I think there's probably plenty of people out there who, you know, that's fine. Says me. I mean, what the fuck I'm talking about? any last words or?
Oh, no. but I've just been glad to. Thanks for having me on.
Well, it's been my pleasure. Well, as always, Larry Flint. Larry Flint is the hustler publisher in the wheelchair who has the penis pump, and he talks about it openly.
Okay, great. I'll have to look
about
him up
on the Adam Carolla show. So
I'll have to look him up.
Don't.
Okay.
Don't.
Okay.
You know, there's things. If people tell you to look at things on the internet, don't. You know, if somebody. Lemon party sounds better than it.
That sounds like a Mormon thing.
So, as always, the discussion continues on the website over at MormonExpression.com and MormonExpression.com/voices. Check out some of the other podcasts like Feminist Mormon Housewives podcast. And if you enjoy these sort of things and want to see us continue on, consider supporting Whitefield's Educational Foundation. We are a 501c3 and all money donated to us is 100% tax deductible. Jack, thanks again. Good night.
Good night.
And letting go has not been easy. But I don't need you loving me for who you think I should be. No, I'm standing here at the end of who I once was. Not sure yet.
Directing, producing, and editing was done by Heather C., and the theme music was provided by McCall Erickson. Thank you for listening. Mormon Expression Voices is a production of the Whitefields Educational Foundation. Find us on the web at whitefieldseducational.org. The Mormon Expression and Mormon Expression Voices podcasts, as well as other educational initiatives, are made possible by your generous donations. Please consider a subscription today.
For myself, if I take the Kinsey tests, I come out as a 0 or a 1. You can't laugh at me during it. This is serious shit, man. You cannot laugh at me during that. The studio light is on. So I come out as bad. Is it because I said I come out as straight? Is that what?